guess it's time, right? Welcome to tonight's edition of the Molloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it. Just printing off the last of the emails here that will probably make it into the program tonight. I'm glad it's Friday. The temperature here in Atlanta at 9:07 p.m. Eastern Time is all the way down to 91 degrees. Sixty-five years ago today, do you know what happened? Huh? Come on, think. I didn't know until I got an email here from, I don't have it down here. Oh well. 65 years ago today, on July 16th, 1945, the United States exploded the first nuclear bomb at Alamogordo, New Mexico. Boy, time just rips by when you're hell-bent on destroying the entire planet, doesn't it? 65 years ago today. Excuse me. Had to sneeze. Along with Russia, this country still holds over 90% of the world's nuclear weapons. Haven't we learned anything in all these years? Well, yeah, for some of us, we've learned that we have a Kenyan in the White House. How do you like this Tea Party claiming it's not racist? Yeah, I'm going to read for you the letter to Lincoln tonight. I'm also getting an awful, awful, awful lot of resistance from folks who take offense at the idea of letting the Republicans have everything and watching it all collapse and then trying to rebuild using a more rational or logical form of self-governance like democratic socialism. Not that people are against democratic socialism, because we already have socialism in this country. It's just not widespread enough so that people understand that it is socialism. We have been educated to believe that the socialists operate in some place over there, but not here. And the truth is that the upper classes, the ultra-wealthy in this country, already enjoy the best part of socialism while also enjoying the most predatory part of capitalism. And the socialism that we enjoy are things like police and fire and schools and, you know, things like that, which the right wing is constantly trying to destroy. So we may get to a couple of those emails, too. Let's begin tonight with just a couple of quick comments about what's going on in the Gulf. Greg Patton in Florida, who writes for, is it Orlando Examiner? Mike, I'm going to keep this short. This is from the AP reports via MSNBC, quote, "Tests from well, not as good as hoped," end quote. Shocking, huh? Who would have guessed? And I think he sent this with the heading, Kate was right. Kate in the Desert, who wrote in last night. Funny how the lying SOBs time it so that the bad news hits on the Friday night non-news hours. Lying rat bastards. Every one of the filthy corporatist pigs at BP knew what the so-called integrity test results would be. Not even Wall Street fell for that BS as the Dow plunged today for whatever reasons, but most Americans will have a happy weekend thinking the gusher in the Gulf is solved. Time for me to practice my Espanol. Caracas sounds better to me than anywhere in the fascist U.S. At least there's a leader there that knows how to deal with oil companies. Nationalize the blank tards. Woo! Signed, pissed off beyond belief. No kidding. Greg in Florida. And Bruce, our economics correspondent, writes, BP disaster update. Dick Cheney's blood pressure, BP, as measured on the stack, is 6,700 pounds per square inch and rising slowly. Engineers aren't sure if this means the well casing is leaking or if the well is running dry already. One thing for sure, it means there is no doomsday pressure under the Gulf floor. They were worried it would shoot past 10,000 and they would need to open the valves. Seismic probes did not show any oil pooling under the surface around the well bore. The last elements of the oil that are closest to neutral buoyancy should reach the surface by this day in 2310. Captain Kirk can celebrate for us. I don't know what neutral buoyancy means, Bruce. The last elements of the oil that are closest to neutral buoyancy. Oh, does that mean it won't come up? No, should reach it. I don't know what that means. Send me an email telling me what that means. I hate to display my ignorance on national radio, but I don't know what that means. So there's, but those are two opposing points of view, I think, certainly. Mark in New York writes, Mike, I'm a podcast subscriber and thus only heard last night's show this afternoon. I wanted to take a moment to respond to the emailer last night who used the phrase, worse is better, and attributed it to the, quote, old Marxists, end quote. Not to make anybody uncomfortable, but I am a contemporary communist. We're really much closer to Malloy's democratic socialism than you might think. And I absolutely disagree with the way in which the caller insinuated that a good plan would be to go ahead and vote in Palin and the teabagger crowd. Of course, I've been making that point too, Mark. Besides the point that the worse is better rhetoric is terribly antiquated, I can't think of any reason whatsoever to advocate that a person vote for Sarah Palin. I share the conviction that the system is beyond any hope of salvation, and that we face the very real possibility that it will, without the people's intervention, destroy our lives and our planet. But ask yourself seriously if casting a vote for the likes of Sarah Palin is something you could live with. Well, actually, probably no. I was thinking more like not voting. Back to Mark. Granted, the caller was being facetious, perhaps. But I think the solutions are in the realm of organizing at the local or the micro level for everything from expanding unionization and workers' councils to food self-sufficiency and passively resisting injustices as you always talk about, i.e. Mario Savio. With the huge numbers of unemployed people being completely discarded by the Congress and the will of big capital, we can't afford to underestimate how dire the situation is right now. Nor can we afford to underestimate how hard a struggle it is going to be to obtain a just society. Sometimes it breaks my heart to hear callers talk about the solution being a massive Democratic Party majority. You know as surely as I do, that won't solve a damn thing. FDR is nowhere to be seen. Keeping it lit, Mark in New York. Well, those are the positions I've been taking, and I've had to, obviously question what I've been saying, which I do all the time. You know, always question what I say. Not that I don't believe what I say, but I still question it. I believe it in the moment, but then when I have a chance to practice a little bit more rational or balanced thought, I sometimes scream and go, I didn't say that, but I did. So, I don't believe letting the monsters take over this country is the way to go. Now, how to stop them is, that's the question. We'll be right back. the hour. Also on this day in history, Irish Dave writes, Ginger Rogers was born. She did everything Fred Astaire did, but she did it backwards and wearing high heels. All right, got a lot of answers here on neutral buoyancy. If something has positive buoyancy, it floats. If it has negative buoyancy, it sinks. And if its density is roughly equal to the surrounding medium, in this case seawater, it stays at whatever level it finds itself, neither rising nor sinking. Bruce in California. Okay, but what does that mean? Reg writes, neutral buoyancy exists when an object will neither float nor sink. Mass of the object is the same as the mass it displaces. It's the Eureka principle. Okay. God, do I feel stupid. Okay, well, I didn't understand how, and still don't, how Bruce was using it, that the last belch from this well will be floating to the surface in the year 2310. Oh, well, that's okay. Here's the Mark Williams post from the Teabag leader. Remember, the Teabag freaks are not corporate, they're not racist, according to some of their membership, while they spout racism constantly and without let-up. The organizing principle of teabaggerism is racism. This is written by Mark Williams, a talk show host, I guess, radio talk show host, and one of the teabag leaders. Dear Mr. Lincoln, we coloreds have taken a vote and decided we don't cotton to that whole emancipation thing. Freedom means having to work for real, think for ourselves, and take consequences along with the rewards. That is just far too much to ask of us colored people, and we demand that it stop. In fact, we held a big meeting and took a vote in Kansas City this week. We voted to condemn a political revival of that old abolitionist spirit called the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party position to end the bailouts, for example, is just silly. Bailouts are just big money welfare, and isn't that what we want all coloreds to strive for? What kind of racist would want to end big money welfare? What they need to do is start handing the bailouts directly to us coloreds. Of course, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is the only responsible party that should be granted the right to disperse the funds. And the ridiculous idea of reducing the size and intrusiveness of government, what kind of massa would ever not want to control my life? As coloreds, we must have somebody care for us. Otherwise, we would be on our own, have to think for ourselves, and make decisions. The racist tea parties also demand that the government stop the out-of-control spending. Again, they directly target coloreds. That means we coloreds would have to compete for jobs like everybody else, and that is just not right. Perhaps the most racist point of all in the Tea Parties is their demand that government stop raising our taxes. That is outrageous. How will we coloreds ever get a widescreen TV in every room if non-coloreds get to keep what they earn? Totally racist. The Tea Party expects coloreds to be productive members of society? Mr. Lincoln, you were the greatest racist ever. We had a great gig. Three squares, room and board, all our decisions made by the massa in the House. Please repeal the 13th and 14th Amendments and let us get back to where we belong. Sincerely, Precious Ben Jealous, Tom's nephew, NAACP, head colored person. No, that's not a bit racist, is it? First it was Acorn, which worked with, what's the euphemism, inner city, underprivileged, people who were redlined by the real estate industry. Then it was the New Black Panther Party, which consists of, what, four people. And now it's the NAACP.
But they're not racist! The Tea Party? Oh, Lord! Racist? Us?
What a bunch of bastards. What a bunch of ignoramuses. What a bunch of white morons. And, to me, there's nothing, the only thing worse than a hypocrite is a coward. Or the only thing worse than a coward is a hypocrite. Coward, hypocrite, hypocrite, coward. Okay, they're about the same. And on my scale of contempt. And I think you have to agree with me that the tea bagger movement is chock-a-block with cowards and hypocrites, hypocrites and cowards, and their organizing principle is, in fact, racism. Hour, so stick around for that, okay? And thanks to the people who have been sending in a steady supply of gift podcast subscriptions so we can keep the game going. We appreciate that very much. Bruce in California explains it, why Bruce Enberg said 2310, the oil would finally work its way to the surface. Bruce says to explain why it could take 300 years, if the crude has neutral buoyancy and stays at the level that it finds itself, neither rising nor falling, then only outside forces, such as currents, can cause it to rise to the surface. Given the volume of oil under the sea, it will circulate very slowly and just wend its way to the top under natural convection and current movement. Bruce. Okay, thanks everybody who took the time to explain that. I guess I should have sat here for a second and thought, neutral buoyancy. Okay, well that's simple, but I didn't. Dave Lindorf has written for The Nation and Business Week and Extra and Salon.com and Counterpunch. He's an investigative reporter. He received a Project Censored Award in 2004. He received an MS in Journalism from the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Smart guy, good writer. I've been reading him for a number of years. And he writes this, what the hell are they thinking in Washington and down at the so-called Unified Command in New Orleans, letting BP try to close off the oil volcano spewing out the top of the damaged blowout preventer stack? And what the hell is the mainstream press doing, not asking about the clear evidence of oil or gas spewing out under pressure from cracks in the seafloor around the base of the blowout preventer? Sure, the initial partial closing of the valves is working, but they haven't built up much pressure yet, just 6,700 pounds per square inch. In an environment where the seafloor pressure is already 5,000 per square inch outside the pipe and on the ground surface, and a lot could go wrong, seriously wrong, with good reason to think it will. I made a call to the media office of the Unified Command, the office set up to respond to public and media inquiries about this disaster, which is supposedly composed of people from the U.S. Coast Guard, other federal agencies, and British Petroleum. When I mentioned the videos taken by BP's own remote operating vehicles, the oil and or gas spewing from cracks in the seafloor, I was told I had to call the press office in Houston, quote, because you're asking us a question about the subsurface well, end quote. But here's the thing. The press office in Houston is not run by the Unified Command. The people at the office there answer the phone with the phrase BP Press. They do this because they're BP employees, and the office is in BP headquarters. This means if you want to know anything about the structural integrity of the well below the blowout preventer, you have to get that information from BP, not from the government. That's the same BP that told government regulators that they could handle any emergency. The same BP that assured us when the well blew that the spill is just leaking 1,000 barrels of oil a day, a figure that appears to have been knowingly understated by a factor of 50 to 100. Now, when I called BP, I got a PR guy with a Brit accent named Tony O'Done, who claimed he was, quote, not aware of any oil leaking around the well itself, end quote. He also said, quote, we're pretty certain that there is no oil leaking around the well that shouldn't be there, end quote. How then to explain their own ROV videos showing exactly that? Mr. O'Done assured me he'd, quote, get back, end quote, with an answer. So far, no answer. O'Done also said something else that was disturbing in its facileness. He said that the relief wells were within feet of the original bore and that they had not detected any hydrocarbons. This, he assured me, meant that there was no leak from the casing. But I pointed out that those side wells had been drilled from a mile away on a slant so that they only approached the original well during the last quarter mile or so from the bottom of the 13,000-foot bore. They were nowhere near the bore during the first several miles of casing, so they can offer no clue as to the integrity of the bore above the first quarter mile or so above the oil reservoir. O'Done agreed that this was true. I also put in a call to the U.S. Energy Department, which is supposedly monitoring the science of this disaster, and which put the attempted shutdown of the well on hold for 48 hours earlier this week, while seismic tests were conducted to try and determine the integrity of the casing that goes from the blowout preventer down to the oil reservoir. A press officer at the Department of Energy asked me to provide a link to the ROV video of the oil leaking from the seabed, and promised to get back to me with an explanation of the department's thinking about that. So far, no response, no explanation. Clearly, though, the Energy Department is worried that shutting down the flow entirely at the top of the stack could cause such high pressures inside the casing that it will blow a crack in the pipe and allow the oil and gas to push upward outside the control of the pipe. That's why they are closing the top of the pipe slowly, monitoring the pressure all the time. If they can shut it down and the pressure rises to 9,000 PSI or more, which is roughly the pressure at which the oil is coming up from below ground, then they will know that the integrity of the pipe has been preserved. But if they cannot get the pressure to build beyond 6,000 or so PSI, it would mean that the casing has been compromised, and they would not be able to shut the flow down from the top, leaving successful completion of a relief well as the only possible shutdown option. But here's the question. If we can already see oil, or is it gas, blowing out of cracks around the BOP, the blowout preventer, doesn't this mean that somewhere below ground, the casing has already breached? And if it has been already blown open, isn't any attempt to shut down the flow and build up the pressure in the well just threatening to worsen whatever break already exists? Especially since BP and the government say that this so-called fix, even if it works and doesn't blow the tube or burst the damaged BOP, is only a temporary fix until the relief well is drilled and the well is plugged at the bottom. Meanwhile, instead of this risky attempt to shut the well at the top, they could be just attaching pipes to collect all the oil in tankers on the surface at minimal risk to the wellhead and the casing. Why isn't the Energy Department or the Coast Guard addressing this question of the threat to the well? Why has no reporter at the regular daily briefing hosted by retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen asked this question? It seems to me a fairly safe prediction that as they crank shut the opening at the top of the well, the oil pushing up from below at 9,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, or even 6,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, is going to push through whatever leaks already exist in and around the well casing and will be blowing up through the ground around the BOP. If it's bursting out through those cracks already, while the pipe is wide open, there should be little doubt that it will burst out even more powerfully when the top of the pipe is capped. That's grade school physics. And if things do go badly, as the oil and gas blow out of the casing and push their way up through the fractured well hole and the poorly set concrete that was put down there by Halliburton to fill the well bore, it will widen the pathways to the surface, probably following new fracture lines that will have it coming out even further from the well hole. In no time, we will have oil spewing from a wide area of seafloor, which will make it impossible to collect. I don't claim to be a geologist, engineer, or oil well expert, and I don't want to be an alarmist. But having seen the images of oil spewing up from the seafloor, I have enough basic scientific understanding to know that the casing has to have been already breached, and that anything that increases the pressure on that damaged casing is only going to make things worse. So why are they trying to close down the well from the top? I'm just asking because nobody else seems to be. Dave Lindorf. So the reason I shared the whole thing with you is simply, you know, he's not an engineer. I'm not an engineer. I don't even know or didn't know what neutral buoyancy is. But I do understand what he's saying. And if you look at all the videos that are out there, all the live streaming videos, you can see exactly what he's talking about. What is that stuff that's coming up over there and over there and over there and over there and over there? And as they increase the pressure, what happens to the, as the British say, the methane? What's going to happen? Now, I mentioned this last night about a methane bubble blowing up, and a couple of the well-respected sources of information to this program assured me that such a thing could not possibly happen. I can't seem to get my mind around that. We'll be right back. Before the hour, Diane wrote to me today, the headline is MSNBC says, now I don't know who that means, somebody on MSNBC, I guess, Dylan Radigan's show yesterday, quote, scientists starting to voice concerns about methane being at levels that will kill millions, end quote. And Diane writes, you downplayed the story regarding methane levels that I emailed to you the other week. What do you have to say now that MSNBC is getting on the bandwagon? I don't know. I don't know if... did I downplay it? Okay. I'm sorry. This scares the crap out of me. I mean, I don't know... how far are we from the... how far are we from the Gulf? Maybe it is time to move to Seattle or Bellingham or Vancouver or Mars. But see, we're up. I hate to reduce this to what about me? But you know, I do have a 5-year-old. Well, she'll soon be 6. But we're up in the air. We're 1,000 feet above sea level here, maybe more. So to hell with it. Somebody told me years ago, back in that real New Agey thing that was happening in this country back in the 70s, somebody said, do you understand, Mike, that someday Atlanta is going to be a seaport? And I thought she was crazy, but I don't know. No, it's scary stuff. Scary stuff. No, I don't want to do that. Oh, yeah. I've got some news for Jews. who's this from? Jack, who is Jewish. For all those Jews who still watch or read Fox News, New York Post, Wall Street Journal, you know, all Murdoch stuff, check out what Rupert Murdoch's star hatemonger Glenn Beck has said about the Jews that killed Jesus. And by the way, if you agree with Beck, keep on patronizing Murdoch, the sick, twisted purveyor of lies and filth. After all, he can't stay in business without you. And what he's talking about, there is a video out there on Pensito Review, P-E-N-S-I-T-O, review.com, pensitoreview.com. Where Beck states categorically that the Jews killed Jesus. This is his quote. I watched the video today, and it's about 6 minutes into the 17-minute video, and oh my God, just sitting there trying to watch this piece of human garbage spew his stuff on Fox. It's worse than I thought. Please, Glenn, get on to the part where you, you know, fulfill your family tradition. He said, quote, this is kind of complex because Jesus did identify with the victims, but Jesus was not a victim. He was a conqueror. Jesus conquered death. He wasn't victimized. He chose to give his life. If he was a victim, and this theology was true, then Jesus would have come back from the dead and made the Jews pay for what they did. That's an abomination. End quote. Now, twisting this whole disgusting, contemptuous, garbagey, religious claptrap to deflect blame for the execution of Jebus away from the Romans and onto the Jews is, according to John Ponder, writing at Pensito, is thought to have begun back in the 4th century when Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire. See? If it's the official religion of the Romans, well, the Romans can't say, we killed God, it was the Jews! The lie metastasized during the Dark Ages and became anti-Semitism, which is still with us 6 decades after its ultimate expression in the Holocaust. And for context, it should be noted that the chief target of Beck's rant was not Jews, it was blacks and liberals who adhere to the Christian social justice and black liberation theology movements. But how much longer is Beck going to be allowed to spew racism and true anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish remarks? Let's not call it anti-Semitism. Let's call it anti-Jewish statements like this. Jesus, every time I say something about Israel, I get, you know, like 50 emails from Likudnik-type Americans who tell me I'm crazy, I'm an anti-Semite, I hate Jews, you know, on and 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 on. But let this this guy do this, and from Mike in Golden, Colorado. Mike, I've not seen the MSNBC story you just referenced. There was a widely circulated video purporting to show oil leaking up from, quote, cracks in the seafloor, end quote, end quote. What it was actually showing was close-ups of part of the sunken Deepwater Horizon rig, which had some oil leaking from it. The seafloor is covered with mud and nearly featureless. It does not have cracks, at least not like the ones in the video, which look more like rust and flaking paint. If oil was leaking up from the seafloor, it would bubble out of the mud and be accompanied by a great deal of silt. Besides mud, the seafloor is also covered with methane hydrate. Any activity which stirs up the silt will also stir up the hydrate. Okay, I mean, it's hot. It's cold. It's cold. It's hot. It's hot. It's cold. It's hot, I say. No, it's cold. It'll always be cold. It's always been hot. But it's changing to cold. No, it's not. It's getting hotter. It's getting colder. Well, look. See the hot? But no, see the cold. I'm about to lose it. If you call in at the bottom of the hour, and we put you on the air and you get the right answer to a multiple choice question, you win a free 1-year podcast subscription, commercial free, to the Molloy program, with a retail value of $59.60. I mentioned this last night. There is an investigation going on in 5 states, including Minnesota, regarding a charity, so-called, referred to as United States Navy Veterans Association. This organization has been collecting lots and lots and lots of money, apparently, in the millions, and handing it off to Republicans to use as they see fit. According to MinnesotaIndependent.com, a newspaper in Minneapolis, I believe, a charity under investigation in 5 states has deep ties to Minnesota, from substantial contributions to Republicans like former Senator Norm Coleman and Representative Michelle Bachmann, to its employment of a Minnesota lobbyist in a recently closed St. Paul operation. Officials in other states are calling the United States Navy Veterans Association a fraudulent charity, and its founder and sole organizer, Bobby Thompson, has disappeared in the wake of investigations alleging the group diverted charitable donations intended for military veterans to Republican candidates and Republican political action committees. Why is this news? I mean, this is what they do. This is what Republicans do. Look what Sean Hannity has been doing for years, his scam about collecting money at these concerts that's supposed to go to the widows and orphans of dead soldiers, and then Hannity blows it on his personal lifestyle. Come on! It goes on. United States Navy Veterans Association is under investigation in Ohio, Florida, Hawaii, Virginia, Missouri, and New Mexico for defrauding donors. And 2 weeks ago, Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray was granted an emergency court order to shut this organization down and prevent it from taking any more donations in the state of Ohio. Cordray said at the time, quote, "The closer we look at this organization, the more outrageous its conduct appears. While very little concrete evidence is available how those funds were spent helping vets or their families, a great deal of information is available about political contributions made personally to candidates or through the political action committees created and to which Mr. Thompson was the sole contributor." United States Navy Veterans Association. Oh, man. According to an investigation by the St. Pete Times, thousands of dollars in donations from the group or its founder went to Minnesota political entities. Former Norm Coleman, Representative Bachman, Republican Party of Minnesota, the Minnesota House Republican Campaign Committee, Republican State House candidate David Carlson, and Virginia, nearly a dozen candidates responded to the controversy by donating contributions from Thompson or the United States Naval Veterans Association, Navy Veterans Association, to charities. Quick, here, take the money! Here in Minnesota, Andy Berkey, writing for the Minnesota Independent, says, here in Minnesota, it's unclear whether USNVA gifts have been returned or redirected to other charities. None of the Minnesota groups or candidates has responded to the Minnesota Independent's query about their actions or plans related to these contributions. Oh, my God. USNVA's board lists two Minnesotans among its ranks, Commander John Clinton, Lieutenant Commander Reindeers, that's his name, Reindeers, but the Minnesota Independent couldn't verify the residency in the state. Similarly, the group lists several officers in its nonprofit disclosure forms, but a report in the St. Petersburg Times says they do not exist. Some of the money has gone to Coleman for U.S. Senate in 06. Coleman for U.S. Senate, 07. Minnesota Coleman Victory Committee, 07. Coleman for U.S. Senate, 07. Republican Party of Minnesota, 08. Republican Party of Minnesota, 08. Coleman for U.S. Senate, 08. Minneapolis or Minnesota House Republican Campaign Committee, 08. David Carlson for Minnesota House. And Minnesota Bachman Victory Committee. Why? Given story after story like this, why do people still believe the teabagger types? Are you people just completely out of your minds? You still believe that the Republican Party has anything to do with respect for the U.S. military or for soldiers or for Marines or for anything? What is wrong with you, dumb jerks? And to any member of the United States military, when you vote your absentee ballot, if that's how you do it, how in the hell do you convince yourself to vote for a Republican? Republican wants to cut your throat. Republican respects you to the same degree that a Christian evangelical respects a Jew, which is to say, not at all. To the Christian evangelicals in the United States, the Jews are simply a means to entice their Savior, their Jesus, to return. And once he does return, the Jews will have an instant choice. Accept Jesus or we'll kill you. And they mean it. Republicans treat members of the United States military the same way. Go over there and make, fill in the blank, safe for corporate exploitation by U.S. corporations. If you get killed, we'll tell your parents you died for the preservation of liberty. We'll say, freedom isn't free. Disgusting, hateful people. How does anybody in this country have anything but utter contempt for the Republicans. Conservatives, teabaggers. Good God. But they just keep doing it. Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, phony organizations like the one I just mentioned, Rush Limbaugh. They milk it and milk it and milk it. And, of course, some of them use the Jesus thing, too. That's what Beck is getting into now. Beck, I guess, is applying for a position as Jesus' brother or God's second son or something. I don't know. But these people are monsters. They're just, there is nothing that they respect. Oh, well. This is the 50th year of the Etch-a-Sketch. Well, also on this day in, when was it? 1917, 18, 19? Don't send it to me because I really don't care. Tsar Nicholas and his family was murdered by the Bolsheviks. A lot of stuff I have today. This is the day that we dropped the first bomb in Alamogordo, New Mexico. I'll tell you what, this Gulf of Mexico thing really has me completely freaked out. I wish I could have a cooler attitude about it, but I don't. Cooler in terms of internal temperature. We'll be right back.
Break,
we will do podcast trivia. So, got an email from a guy named Peter Robert, who is in Bellevue, Washington. And he sent it to me and to several other media outlets, a bunch of them. And he writes, "Sirs, I am an unemployed American. I'm actually a long-term unemployed American who has been out of work for a period such that my benefits have been exhausted. I am part of a category of the unemployed that can no longer receive unemployment benefits because I have received benefits for more than 99 weeks, and that is the limit. Like many others, I would like to get back to work, but there are not enough jobs being created to absorb us all. In fact, in the near future, the number of people in my category of unemployed will continue to grow monthly in the hundreds of thousands. Because the current rate of job creation, or any reasonable projected rate of growth, if it should continue to happen, will be insufficient to absorb us all for the next couple of years. Thus, it will take years for the majority of us to get back to work, if ever, as former members of the working class will have become poor and homeless without benefits. Many of us have petitioned and written to our senators and members of Congress asking for their help in addressing this growing critical social economic problem, hoping they would address it in the passing of the coming tax extenders bill, which has already been passed. But it seems many, but it seems many senators and members of Congress just do not have the political will to address the issue, to add benefits beyond the 99-week boundary. It's been said they just don't understand because mainstream media have been absent in informing the general public about this brewing crisis. And if made an effort to do documentaries or news stories on the subject, it might put the issue in better light. In need of help, I'm here and now asking if your network could give attention to this issue and do a documentary and or news stories such that this crisis is better known by all Americans and politicians in Washington that have the power to do something about it. Thank you, Peter Robert, and his address in Bellevue, Washington. You know, you see these letters now, you see these emails now, and Peter, if you're listening, I wish I had the power to do that. I don't. I hope someone with power answers you. I hope one of the television, some television producer someplace will read your email, or the hundreds of, I'm sure, that go every day to media outlets. Television and documentary makers to let people know. The sense I get is that just like we are not involved, we being the vast majority of Americans are not involved in the killing that's going on in Afghanistan, the killing that goes on in Iraq. We are not involved except from watching the pictures on television of this horror that's occurring in the Gulf. By not involved, I mean, we look at this stuff and we just tend to go, oh, Jesus, I can't not, and walk away. And like we've talked about on this program many times, denial and avoidance, you know, work for certain things, but massive unemployment, an oil eruption in the Gulf, a collapse of the U.S. economy. So what to do about it? I wish I had some answers. I wish I did. I wish I had some answers. When my mother was alive, I used to ask her, what was it like during the Depression? And one of the things that she said to me was, well, you'll never know. You'll never experience what we had to experience because rules were set up to make sure it never happened again. And I guess as a result of the time and the way that I grew up, even though my childhood was, in that lower working class area, we always thought things would get better, things would be better. Somehow the rent got paid, there was food on the table, even though sometimes it was donated food. But I look ahead a little bit here. 5-10 years, you know, in my imagination, and I just wonder how is this going to play out? How's this going to work? I wish I knew. We have a break here, and when we come back, I have in my hand the questions. And if you would like to play podcast trivia, now's the time to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. If you get the right answer, you win a one-year subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads, commercial-free. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The quality of mercy is not.
answer, you win a one-year commercial-free podcast download subscription to this program with which you can do anything you want. All you have to do is get the right answer. All right, let's see what we got here. Tyler is in Waterloo, Iowa. Is that right, Tyler?
That's right, Mike.
Well, and you're listening. I know you're not listening via a radio station there. You're listening on XM.
Yeah, that's right. And I got to tell you, I used to listen to you all the time in the old WLS days, and it's really good to hear your voice again, especially in times like this. Well, I'm really happy about it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Tyler. All right, are you ready to do podcast trivia?
I sure am.
Okay, here we go. Former Veep and mastermind of evil Dick Cheney recently underwent a cardiac procedure that implanted a device that left him without a pulse or a heartbeat. What was the name of the device? Here we go. Is it A, a Nazi, N-A-Z-I, which stands for Necessary Assist Zipping Implant? Was it an Evil, which stands for Emergency Ventricular Implant Loop? Was it an LVAD, which stands for Left Ventricular Assist Device, or was it a TURD, which stands for Timed Unitary Revolving Device?
I would say C.
C. Well, that's exactly... All right, crowd, calm down. Yeah.
I was tempted to say A on that one, but no, I had to go with C.
A necessary, hold on just a second, you got the right answer. A necessary assist zipping implant, which is an N-A-Z-I, that's a Nazi. An emergency ventricular implant loop, that would be an E-V-I-L, an evil.
Yep.
Or a timed unitary revolving device, the T-U-R-D, which would be... Am I allowed to say that on the air? I am. I'm allowed to say that. Well, you know. All right. Very good. Way to go, Tyler. Let me put you on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. You have won, my friend. And I hope you enjoy the one-year subscription. Thanks for tuning in, Tyler. I do appreciate it. A necessary assist zipping implant?
Hey, you try to come up with a Z word.
Well, that's true. What's it called? Really, an LVAD? LVAD. Left ventricular assist device. I'm starting to believe he's not going to make it out of the ICU. I really am. I mean, good Lord. When all of a sudden your heart doesn't do anything anymore except sit there. It's a chamber in this monster through which blood flows. Good Lord. Good for the a group of all-stars. According to Dave Zinn, writing at The Nation, if Major League Baseball's 2011 All-Star Game is held as planned in the anti-immigrant meth lab of democracy, otherwise known as Arizona. Meth lab of democracy. Players are letting it be known that the show will go on without them. On Monday's media day for this week's 2010 game in Anaheim, several Latino All-Stars were asked for their thoughts about next year's game in Phoenix taking place in a state being monitored by the Justice Department for racial profiling. Milwaukee Brewers pitcher Giovanni Gallardo said, if the game is in Arizona, I will totally boycott. Kansas City reliever Joaquin Soria and Detroit Tigers pitcher Jose Valverde seconded that emotion. Soria said, quote, they could stop me and ask to see my papers. I have to stand with my Latin community on this, end quote. The three have now joined two San Diego Padres, San Diego Padres All-Star Adrian Gonzalez and his teammates Yorvit Torrealba and Heath Bell, along with Chicago White Sox manager Ozzy Guillen. I'm sorry, I don't follow the White Sox, and stating that they would stay away from Arizona next summer. Major League home run leader, Toronto Blue Jays outfielder Jose Bautista said, quote, hopefully there are some changes in the law before next year. We have to back up our Latin communities, end quote. The biggest star in the game, Albert Pujols, came out in direct opposition to his Arizona law-loving manager, Tony La Russa, saying, quote, I'm opposed to it. How are you going to tell me that me being Hispanic, if you stop me and I don't have my ID, you're going to arrest me? That can't be. And a spokesperson for the Baseball Players Association also made news by saying they would fully back any player who would choose to boycott the 2011 game. Good. You know, this is what I and a lot of people in the left community, if I can claim membership there, have been calling for. Just refuse to do it. Refuse to do whatever. In this case, it's to play in Phoenix or in Arizona. You know, not Phoenix. I'm not picking on Phoenix, but just don't play in Arizona. Why would anybody with Latino or Hispanic, whatever the correct word is now, with that sort of background, why would you go play in Arizona, an all-star game? I mean, why? Once you leave the baseball diamond and you're not in your stadium and you're not in your uniform and you might be walking down the street in Phoenix or wherever you might go, guess what? Well, I'm not going to say guess what to you. You know what? You know, this is America. This is a capitalist society. About the only way you can make people hurt, you go all the way back to the Montgomery bus boycott on this one, is to hit them in their pocketbooks. That's all. Just that's it. We don't have, for some reason, a moral sense in this country that supersedes the pain that comes from not spending money. Isn't that weird? We don't have a sense of justice that is independent of doing financial or money boycotts. You know, well, I'm not going to shop in that store. I'm not going to ride that bus. I'm not going to go to that city and participate in that baseball game. And that's going to cost that store, that bus, that community money. And that's how you get attention. You cannot say to people, hey, this is wrong. This is just wrong, whatever this happens to be. There's so many this's that keep popping up in the good old United States of America. Eh? All right. We're going to take some phone calls. I've got some other things here. Oh, yeah, one more thing. Alan Greenspan, former Federal Reserve Chairman, according to Bloomberg News Online, who backed Bush's 2001 tax cuts that has bankrupted the country and helped persuade Congress to pass them. He said today that lawmakers should allow the reductions to expire at the end of this year. Now, this is what the Republicans in Congress call a massive tax increase, rather than letting the tax breaks that the wealthy have enjoyed in this country the past 9 years, and that have absolutely and utterly destroyed this country while they got rich. Greenspan, one of the authors, well, not authors necessarily, but one of the big cheerleaders, says, you should let them expire. Greenspan said in an interview in Bloomberg Television's Conversations with Judy Woodruff, quote, they should follow the law and let them lapse. And he cites a need for the tax revenue to reduce the federal budget deficit. The law says they're supposed to run out. So these filthy, pig-eating Republicans running for office say it's a tax increase. And all the Congress has to do is nothing. The stuff is due to expire. The former U.S. Central Bank chairman, Greenspan, also said the economy is in what he calls a temporary slump and would emerge with a, his word, sluggish 3% growth rate in the second half of this year. Blah, 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 blah. So Alan Greenspan, oh, he must be a communist. Oh, wait a minute. Was he born in Kenya? Oh, no. Greenspan, he's Jewish, right? That's what he's responsible for killing Christ, right, Glenn? These right-wingers are eating the country alive. We have to make them go away. We have to make them go away. We have to. And eventually we will. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we are going to your phone calls. Okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The number here, by the way, is 877-996-2556. Mark is in San Francisco listening to Green 960. Hey, Mark.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm hanging in there with this Republican terrorism, economic terrorism they've unleashed on this country.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It sure is. And, you know, if we're looking for answers on when the next time a Republican got up and said, we have no more money, we can't afford this, I'd say, okay, fine. But let's fix that. Let's undo Reaganomics. Let's go back and take the tax cuts away from Reagan, what Reagan gave the rich. Let's take all the loopholes away from the corporations.
Let's stop the wars.
Let's take the cap off the Social Security so that the richer people can pay into it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at penalty taxes for exporting our jobs. You know, it just goes on and on. But
sure.
Basically, undo Reaganomics is what we have to do. It's a failure, and the Republicans are the cause of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 30 years of evidence that they have no credibility in anything they do, but especially in economics. When they talk economics, they have no credibility. They've destroyed economically this country.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I don't know why more people don't get it, Mark. Do you?
I don't. Because this, I mean, if they can't see when the Republicans refuse unemployment extensions, when they caused the loss of all these jobs with Bush, and they refuse that, and then they want to talk about making Social Security to 70 years old, and those kind of things come up, and you can see that they're with the oil companies, with the corporations. You've got to be insane to go along with this. And also, Mike, one quick thing on this hate radio that's going around. When I went to vote for Barack Obama, there was a lot of young people, old people. There was a unity in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after 2 years of hate radio, they've basically made this country into and everything else. It's a total disgrace.
Wait, Mark, you faded out. They basically made this country into what?
Yeah, basically a hate. Hate the brown people, hate the black people, hate Barack Obama. I mean, it's just hate.
Yeah, and
lies.
And what do you think of the insistence of these teabag freaks that the teabaggers are not racist? Isn't that funny to hear? I mean, when I was a kid, if I would have said something like that, given the context, my grandmother would have taken a piece of lava soap, which was horrible stuff, and washed my mouth out with it for lying. Wouldn't you like to grab some of these teabaggers and, hold them down, get 6 or 7 people, hold them down, immobilize them, and then take a piece of lava soap and wash their mouths out for lying? Huh?
I agree with you, Mike. And you know, the other thing is, why aren't they down there on the golf course coast cleaning up the oil. They don't want the government involved. Well, why don't they get down there and clean it up?
Because they are lying, cowardly hypocrites.
Amen.
That's why. Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Teabaggers. That's what should happen. Sarge is calling in from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Oh, my God, KPHX still carries our program?
Well, actually, I'm calling listening on the Internet.
Oh.
I won't go into that. But, I just wanted to call. You were talking about Arizona and Mississippi. My God, you know, I happen to be connected to both.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, my twin sister still lives on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and lucky me, I've got my choice. I can either stay here in Jim and Juan Crow, Arizona, or I can move back to Miss Oil, Mississippi. So, lucky me, huh?
Yeah, looks so.
I tell you what, Mike, I am affected by the oil because I do have money in Mississippi, in my hometown,
yeah. And
of course, about half of my hometown works offshore, so guess what's happening down there? And, of course, this is affecting my money there.
Mm-hmm.
So I am affected by that, and my twin sister has kept me updated every day of what was going on down there. One day she called, and she was very sick, and it was from the smell of the oil. It is a horrendous thing down there, and people are depressed.
I remember when I first got to know you, so to speak, was over the radio because of the work you and a bunch of other people were doing after Katrina. And now this. I mean, this is astonishing. Two of the worst disasters to hit this country. One, just a natural disaster, sort of, although I refuse to believe that the breaking of the...
afterwards was no natural.
Right, the levees was not, the breaking of the levees was not natural. And now this. And it's just astonishing. I don't know how people on the Louisiana Gulf Coast or other parts of the Gulf Coast, how they can continue. I don't get it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, out here in Arizona, I'm going to tell you, Mike, they have this idea, and I've heard it. What's going to happen is, see, we're not worried about your boycotts because it's only temporary. You'll get over it. You'll start spending money back in Arizona. Uh-huh. So we're not going to worry about you. We can offset you. That's the attitude.
Sure.
And the Democrats here are scared. They're not standing up. They're not fighting this thing. I even heard one say today, we got to be smart about it. We're in a minority, so we've got to be careful how we speak out. And so, you know, I'm sorry, man. We are going to have problems in this country. Mike, I grew up under Jim Crow, Mississippi. What I see out here is just like it, and so I just call it one crow.
One crow.
It is one crow, my friend.
Yeah, I hear you. All right.
And by the way, let me say one thing,
sure,
Mike.
Sarge.
I miss my buddy Marge.
Yeah, that was sad. I mean, it's just sad. I knew she was sick. A lot of us knew she was sick, but we didn't know she was that sick. I miss her too, Sarge.
I did too. I just want to say that. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Sarge. Appreciate it. Okay. Truth Seekers break. We'll be back. We have every single line here is open, so if you want to talk, 877-996-2556. Now's the time to do it. Do it. Do it. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. Ouch. We are going to take your phone calls now if you'd like to join in. The number is 877-996-2556, right? Michael is in Hebron, Indiana. Hey, Michael.
Good evening, Mike. How you doing?
I'm fine.
I've got a few things to say. I listen to you every night, and I'm just totally disgusted. I think if we're going to drill for oil, it ought to be made safe, number one. Number two, they should nationalize the oil. I think that would pay for a lot of things that we need paid for in this country. The other comment I have is I don't understand this, and maybe you can give me your opinion or answer my question. When Bush was president and the Democrats basically weren't going along with some of the things that he was trying to do, he just used executive orders. And I don't understand why this president won't do something like that. As far as I'm concerned, health care bill that was passed, the credit bill that was passed, have more holes in it than a Swiss cheese, and loopholes that allow, you know, these corporations to work around these so-called new laws that are supposed to protect us. So I really don't see where it did that much good. I'd like to get your opinion on that.
Well, I think the attitude of Obama's attitude is that anything that he gets passed that even slightly resembles financial reform on Wall Street or health insurance reform or whatever, you know, whatever his latest project is, anything that I think his attitude is, anything is an improvement over what has happened over the past 30 years, starting with Reagan and going through two Bushes and Clinton. So I would imagine that's his attitude. I don't think Barack Obama is an evil man. I do think Dick Cheney was literally, I think he was personifies evil.
I agree.
I think George W. Bush personified idiocy and stupidity. Obama, you know, he's too smart by half. And, I'm not anti-intellectual, bless his heart, for being as brilliant as he is, but he's, I don't think he is what a lot of people hoped he would be. He's not a liberal. He's not a progressive. He's a politician in mainstream America. He is, you know who the biggest recipient of BP campaign money was, when was it? 2008 or 2009? It was, 2008. It was Barack Obama.
I just don't understand why he doesn't press harder against the Republicans instead of trying to agree with them all the time or try to get them on your side. You know, the Republicans will straight up kill you. They don't try to reason with you. And he's done more than enough reasoning, I feel.
Well, I think Obama is a get-along, go-along kind of guy. Clinton was a manipulator. He knew how to manipulate Republicans. And, of course, they paid him back by impeaching him. Obama is just not a stand-up, kick-your-ass kind of person. Don't forget, Obama had, a couple of years in the U.S. Senate before that. What did he do? He was in the Illinois legislature. What did he do before that? He was an organizer. What did he do before that? He was in school. So, I mean, how old is he? 46? 45? I've got food in my refrigerator older than that. So Obama is just not an experienced politician. He doesn't know how to grab Mitch McConnell around the throat, more or less. I'm speaking figuratively here, and shake that old racist bastard until his teeth fall out. He doesn't know how to do that. Lyndon Johnson knew how to do that kind of stuff. Dick Nixon knew how to do that kind of stuff. I think Jimmy Carter knew how to do that, but not Obama. So as far as executive orders, there are certain things that can be done with executive orders. Obama could be making all these recess appointments. Well, I guess Congress is back now, but he made several where he doesn't need confirmation of the Senate because they're out. They're back home telling lies to their constituents. But Obama is just not that type of pusher. He just isn't. And we can get all psychoanalytical about why he isn't, having to do with his childhood and growing up biracial in a racist society. A lot of people say, well, he didn't have to experience that. Well, the hell he didn't. Anybody who's skin is darker than mine has to deal with racism in this country. So anyway, thanks, Paul. Michael. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Paul is in Kent, Georgia. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I was just calling about the lack of outrage about BP helping to get Meg Rahi out of Scotland back to Libya.
Yeah. We talked about it the other night.
Okay. I missed that show.
But it hasn't gotten a lot of attention. I'm not sure why. New York Times has had a couple of pieces about it over the past couple of days. But, BP, and this is another thing. You know, when I rail against capitalism, I say it's a bloody, filthy economic system. People die. And then a story like that just kind of bubbles up to the surface where 270 people died in Lockerbie, Scotland, because of a terrorist bomb. And the guy who the court said was the mastermind or engineered it, I don't know if that's true, but that's what the court said. He gets released on a deal. BP, British Petroleum, gets him released from a British prison so that British Petroleum can drill for oil off the coast of Libya. That's what they do.
Exactly. Complaining about terrorists, not wanting to deal with terrorists, and here you are essentially giving money to terrorists.
Right.
And where is the outrage from the people here wanting to kick BP out of this country after doing that? Right?
Nah, you'll never see that, Paul.
No, because they're hypocrites.
Well, they're hypocrites, and they're also ignorant,
right.
And it's willful ignorance, or they're just, too Republican. You know, they just look at it and say, well, that's just, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
I hope you and Kent have a good night.
All right. Thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, that story has just gone nowhere. The guy who was convicted of, was he the mastermind? I don't know, whatever he was, of the Lockerbie, Scotland bombing way back in 88, 89? The airliner that crashed into Lockerbie, Scotland. Turns out that BP, now of course BP, these are all allegations, nobody really knows what happened, right? But BP is denying everything. No, we didn't do any of that. What are you talking about? No, we didn't. What? Huh? Did you see this thing? We only have a couple of minutes here before the next break. If a priest sexually abuses a child, is he as sinful as another priest who ordains a female cleric? Did you see what the Vatican has come out with? The Catholic Church is now saying that if you are a Catholic priest and you ordain a woman to be a priest, female priest, the sin you have just committed against this corrupt organization, the Catholic Church, is as great as if you were a priest who buggered a little kid. I mean, these religions, Islam, I don't care what Islam's, I don't care what it's, the Quran says. Islam demonstrates its contempt for women constantly. I don't care what the Catholic Church says about the respect for women. They demonstrate their utter contempt. I don't care what Orthodox Jews say about their women. They demonstrate utter contempt for females. I hate these religions. I really do. We'll be right back.
Yeah. 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 Ye
Republic Speaker Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. How you doing tonight? You okay? Huh? You driving tonight? You cruising around? Hey, you want to read something really cool? It's a truth out. It's from yesterday, Thursday. The title is Conservatism's Death Gusher. It's written by George Lakoff. Woo, Lord have mercy. Got to read it. Mary is in Early, Iowa.
Yeah.
Is that right? Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just am very disappointed in Obama, especially first when we wanted a national health care plan. He let Max Baucus arrest 18 people who came in wanting a national health care plan when they were working it up. Then in the banking, he put in to help him in his cabinet the bankers. And when it came to the war, in the Pentagon, he kept the same people that George Bush had.
Right.
And it just seems to me that he let everything go until it was watered down just the way he wanted it. And I have no faith in him whatsoever. And I am a dyed-in-the-world Democrat.
What are you going to do in 2012, Mary? Who are you going to vote for president? Are you going to vote? Because I don't think he's going to get a challenge from the Democratic left. There is no Democratic left anymore. So the choice will be Barack Obama or some crazed, out-of-control, teabag-supported Republican. What are you going to do?
I have never voted for a Republican in my life. I vote a straight Democratic.
Right.
I would like to see someone with guts like Russ Feingold, Sherrod Brown, but I'm afraid that won't happen.
Right. So
of course I will vote for a straight Democratic ticket because I know what these Republicans are.
So you vote for him again?
I will vote for him again if he's in.
Yeah.
Nothing could be worse than the Republicans.
Well, that's true. That's true. The worst Democrat on his or her worst day is better than the average Republican on his or her best day. That's just
right. And I knew long before Barack Obama knew that no Republican was ever going to vote for the health care, for anything that he put up. What took him so long? He's supposed to be so smart. I believe that he let everything go because he is controlled by the
corporatists.
Corporatists. He has taken money from them. He's controlled by them. And I think that he let it get watered down until they would be very happy, the corporations, with what the end game was.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who would agree with you, Mary, millions of people. And, Molly Ivins said a long time ago where it concerns politicians, you got to dance with the ones that brung you. And Barack Obama, I guess, feels that corporate America is what put him in power, although I was under the impression it was massive fundraising using the Internet, where lots and lots and lots of us working folk or common folk or small people or lower middle class people or middle class people, I was under the impression that we all were the ones who contributed and provided the cash necessary in this corrupt society to get him elected. So I don't understand, and I shall not understand. I've heard every possible scenario, Mary, of why Barack Obama is governing the way he is, that he's afraid to do otherwise, that he's got a master plan that's going to take a couple more years to put into place, that he is making progress, but we're also caught up in listening to the rhetoric that says he's not making progress. You know, that he was never a liberal or a progressive, never claimed to be, or that he's just an abject failure. He's another politician who just lies through his teeth, only he's slicker in doing it. He's better educated. He's a better speaker. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I really don't. Mary, thanks. I appreciate it. If there were to be a candidate that would challenge him from the left, I certainly would support that person. There's no question about that. Not that my support means a damn thing, but it's as important as your support, Truth Seeker. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Listening online. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
Hey.
Something's been making me wonder. We got, 15, 20 million people unemployed here right now?
I would think, yeah, at least.
Half of them looking, half of them gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were, who are, they're not insane, if those of us who realize that we should not be in Afghanistan or Iraq and brought those soldiers home, what would that do to our unemployment situation?
Well,
we don't.
This is not like the end of World War II. We don't have, or even Vietnam. We don't have that many people in these two countries. I think we have 100,000 in Afghanistan, and 130,000 in Iraq. That's 230,000 people. Hell, we got 230,000 people a month that are being laid off. It would be difficult to absorb. But if we ended both of these occupations and ended the funding of these two illegal occupations and wars and whatever they want to call them, and put that money into creating jobs, it could be done very easily. It could put lots of people back together. I mean, the Iraq war itself, Matt, has cost so far around $1 trillion. Remember when Donald Rumsfeld or the murderer Dick Cheney said something about, this war will pay for itself? I mean, they were talking about a war that pays for itself. What did they mean by that?
It didn't work.
No, it didn't. Of course,
no,
it didn't.
I just think it would put more pressure, and I think that, the GI Bill was brought up to help absorb the World War II vets when they came home, and it did help. It put them in college, and it did help. But I don't know. Has anyone seriously considered another WPA or?
I wish somebody would.
I wish they would too. It's about time, I think, to start putting that into place.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Matt. Okay. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. James is driving in Mississippi. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike. You know, of all the things that Barack inherited. One of them wasn't a true 60-vote Senate. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, the president, he doesn't make laws. The Senate makes laws. And so, you know, we're really lucky with anything that we're able to get out of that, just from the makeup of the Senate. And nobody seems like they want to put the blame on the Senate. It's all Barack's fault, but nobody looks at the tools that he has to work with.
Well, I think when there is a contest between Obama and the Republicans, the Republicans are always, always wrong. And the reason for it is they are not righteous. Republicans, if Barack Obama decided to come up, I don't care what his legislation, hell, if Obama came up with the idea of reducing the corporate tax rate to zero, Republicans would still oppose him because Obama had come up with the idea. You see what I'm saying?
Correct. And just like the conservatives, you know, that's the biggest problem that he has. And the Republicans don't really have to do anything. It's just like, no, you know, they're not going to even tell what their platform is that they're going to run on. They don't have to do anything.
Right,
you know, we have enough for the conservatives. I think it was King out of New York that made the statement that they're not going to tell the public what they got to run on because they don't want them to know. And we're sitting back here with the conservatives up there. And I do think Barack is smart enough just to take whatever he can get until some changes are made. And then, you know, the progressives sit back, all we do is talk on the radio, we complain, but we don't get out there and protest. We are getting out there, you know, doing like the tea baggers are doing. We're just sitting back complaining and expect them to do everything by itself. So, you know, we have to take some of that responsibility too.
Oh, sure, sure.
All right. I enjoy you, Mike, and I just hand up here to where, you know, I guess I'm a liberal because I'm a liberal progressive, however you guys want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't think that we take account of everything, you know, just the tools that he has to work with to get anything and all done. And so, but like you said, a bad Democrats
worse than
a day
of a public
than any day.
That's true. That's true. Thanks, James. I appreciate you calling, pal. Joe writes from Temecula. Is that how you pronounce it? California? Hi, Mike. An emerging theme Republicans are pushing is that the United States needs some sort of austerity plan, such as what is being proposed for the European Union. What they're referring to is cutting entitlements, like Social Security and Medicare. Republicans often say, we spend too much money, and so now we need to tighten our belts. We did not spend the money. They did, fighting two wars and not paying for them. So why are we being forced to pay? Further, Republicans are claiming we need another round of tax cuts for the wealthy elite in order to get the economy going again. Yeah, how many times have we heard that? Well, you know, Reagan started that with his trickle-down theories, or what was his budget director? What the hell was that guy's name? Stockman, David Stockman. Trickle-down. I remember the first time I heard that. It was like, you know, those of us on the bottom of the food chain were supposed to wait until some crumbs were pushed off the table. Anyway, their theory is that the wealthy elite are allowed, if the wealthy elite are allowed to keep more of their money in the form of tax cuts, they will invest that money right here at home in the good old USA, creating jobs aplenty in the process. Oh, and these tax cuts don't have to be offset or paid for. Just pile more on the national debt. The only problem with Republican economic theory, also known as Reaganomics or voodoo economics, is that not only have we been trying it for 30 years, but we just tried again in 2001 and 2003 the Bush tax cuts. These tax cuts added $1.7 trillion to the national debt, as they were not paid for. But they were billed to the American people as a way to boost the economy. Yeah, the wealthy were going to invest in America and create jobs. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what we saw was just the opposite. Sure, the wealthy elite CEOs paid themselves record salaries, and the investor class saw their dividends skyrocket. But at the same time, more and more jobs were moved overseas. They didn't invest all the money, all the extra money in America. They took their money and went to Dubai or other playgrounds where the economic royalists frolic. To wit, it is not we who need to be punished for our excesses via draconian austerity measures. Instead, it is the wealthy elite who failed to invest in America and create jobs that should be punished. They should be punished with what I call the Wealthy Elite Austerity Program, or WEAP. WEAP. Here's what it is. For those who have more than $50 million in assets, the United States will seize everything above $50 million. Well, why not everything? The money and property seized will go directly toward creating jobs via infrastructure projects around the country. Only American companies and American labor are to be used. The wealthy elite will get to keep their mansion, yacht, or one mansion, one yacht, one helicopter, one private jet, and four collectible cars. Everything else goes. They failed to keep up their end of the bargain. They failed to invest in America. It's time to force them to do it. They obviously won't do it out of the goodness of their hearts, as was previously promised by Bush and the Republicans. They get to keep a jet, a helicopter, a yacht, a mansion, and four collectible cars. Everything else goes. Wow. You're being hard on them, Joe. I think Joe is... kidding. Where are we? Right there. Kevin is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's see on XM. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. I called because I'm basically tired of people making, you know, they just make up excuses for Obama all the time.
I don't think a lot of people are still doing that. I really don't. I think the people that put him into office, the people that voted for him because we believed that there was at least a chance that he might do the things he said, and we just damn sure didn't want John McCain to be president. I think, we've just kind of, accepted that he is what he is. Don't you think? I don't think anybody's cutting him any slack anymore. Do you?
I don't really, but they're always asking, why is he doing this, why is he doing that? You know exactly why he's doing this. That man knows exactly what he's doing. He went to Harvard, Yale, or whatever. He, you know what I mean? He's no dummy. He's related to George Bush, John Kerry, and all the other ones, you know what I mean, who are related to the royal family, who still have us, you know, under their thumb. And we're basically still fighting the war against the royal family, and it's never going to end because we have voters who, you know, still vote against their best interests.
I know, and I think that's going to continue because, you know, let's remember where we are, Kevin. We are someplace where people are willfully stupid. Thanks, Kevin. I got a boogie.
Miles of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a...
of folks that I refer to as our crew. Sharon Gordy, who provides us with an abundance of military affairs reports Bruce Enberg, economics, Kay Petrini, education. Although Kay is on vacation now because it's summer. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who are the program's ethics advisors, and Kathy Bay, who is our executive producer and engineer. How's the engineering thing going for you? Huh?
Kind of hopey changey.
Hopey changey.
Feeling pretty mavericky.
Yeah. John is in Los Angeles listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike. Hi.
Hi.
Fellow speakers, I'd like to say that I've listening to KTLK, you know, I'm an hour late, so I'm not necessarily up to date, but I was listening to your conversation with Kevin.
Uh-huh.
Was fed up with all the happy talk about Obama. Well, I have to say that I do feel somewhat like Kevin in that when Barack Obama is attacked by all the extreme right-wingers, whether they're Tea Party members or Republicans, he's defended by other partisan cheerleaders.
Uh-huh.
To make him look less like a Republican and more like a Republicrat. And I'm quite fed up with that that behavior. He's more of a Republican, in my opinion, but than he is a Democrat. But the one reason why I called was an hour ago you were talking about boycott.
Mm-hmm.
And the perfect, let's say, passive, not aggressive solution to causing change.
Mm-hmm.
And with some people who claim that they're not good, they're not successful, they all feel they need to be a great big money loser, a game changer. But I would just like to mention that I think that one of the ways to measure success in a boycott is one's personal involvement. Just proving to themselves that they're doing it for themselves and not trying to achieve a bunch of accolades from their peers.
Mm-hmm.
It all helps, if you get a bunch of people going in on it,
right?
With all this internet thing and all. But there are lots of different ways to measure success of boycotts. That's one excellent passive way of bringing change about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I applaud. I'd applaud everyone who boycotted this KTLK for being an hour late on your show. It crimps my style and everybody else who listens to KTLK for taking part in your program.
But if you boycott them, then they'll just say to hell with this and drop the show.
Well, you know what?
Well, rather, no, what you...
There are other ways we can go into XM, okay?
Well,
and maybe I should.
Yeah, but that, XM, no matter how good they are, no matter how good the programming is, you got to subscribe. Why don't you, John, just call KTLK and ask them to...
Oh, I have. They ignore. This is one thing where, you do what you think you can do.
Right.
Do your best for yourself, and until KTLK hears from enough people, not just little old me, they're going to do what all big Clear Channel corporations do.
Well, just don't through your efforts wind up getting the program bounced off KTLK.
Well, my efforts won't do that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just teasing you. I don't like the fact that KTLK is putting us an hour later either. I really don't like it.
You don't have to say it. You don't have to say it. I'm talking.
Good.
I'm talking. Let me be the bad guy.
Do it,
Mike.
Do it, John. All right, John.
Anyway,
thanks.
You take it easy and sell a lot of shirts.
I'll sell a lot of shirts. Hey, John. What does he mean, Kathy? Sell a lot of shirts. What the hell does that mean? Huh? What?
I think rumor has it we have merchandise for sale.
Nobody ever buys that stuff.
No one wants it.
No, nobody ever buys
it. There. Wants to wear something that says True Seeker on it.
Michael and Roswell writes.
Maybe they can put their Spock ears on.
Yeah, that's true.
Michael try to pick up girls.
Michael and Roswell writes, maybe Obama's situation can be put into just one sentence. Here it is. The more people that realize that what's going on is, in fact, a class war, the more they see that Obama's mostly been sounding the bugle for the wrong side. That's how it feels. That's good. I appreciate that. That's good, because that's exactly how it feels to me sometimes. It really does. Well, I'll tell you what. Program's over. I'll see you Monday. Right? We're working Monday, right? Okay. I'll see you Monday. Take care. All right. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.